George Walser, who started liberal. You see Darwin Drive, Thomas Paine Avenue there for the founder who wrote Common Sense, but he also had a treatise against the Bible and said that the Bible was not the inspired Word of God. Ingersoll, for Robert Ingersoll. How do you think liberal Missouri did? Well, there's a man by the name of Clark Braden, who was a member of the Lord's Church, if I understand it correctly. He was a traveling preacher, evangelist, and debater. And he had heard about liberal Missouri, so he went into liberal to see what was going on there. And when he went into liberal Missouri, he wrote an article for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Now, this is an actual copy of the 1885 newspaper article from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And if you were able to read it, the colony of liberal in this state, a practical experiment in infidelity. Infidels, that's what they were known as the time. Now, we would call them skeptics, atheists, agnostics, etc. But this is a practical experiment. What does that mean, practical? It means you take one of your beliefs and you put it into practice and you see what happens. And so that's what they did. And as he wrote this article, he said, let me tell you what's going on in liberal Missouri. He said, number one, everybody cusses. The little kids cuss, the women cuss, the men cuss, everybody does. It is a place where bad language is rampant. He said, number two, the hotels are brothels. There is prostitution all over the place. You can't find a hotel, basically, where there is not rampant prostitution going on. He said, number three, he said, drunkenness and revelry are abounding in the city to a terrible degree. He said the children do not obey their parents, and most people who are in liberal Missouri wish they could leave, but their property value has gone down so badly that they can't sell their place and leave. So one of the places that he called a brothel, the hotel owners, sued him for $25,000. At the time, for libel and slander, and said, this is not true, this is libel, this is slander, we are a much better society than that, the hotels are not brothels, this is defamatory speech. The court case got thrown out. Clark Braden never had to appear, never had to defend himself at all. The person who brought the case against Clark Braden had to pay all of the court expenses because apparently what Clark Braden said was exactly right. That's what happened in liberal Missouri. If you have a place where people do not have a standard from God for morality, well, a practical experiment in infidelity shows you exactly what would happen if people behaved like they didn't think that there is a God. Well, interestingly, George Walser, if you go to liberal, which I have, you go to liberal, the cemetery situation is the most unique that I've ever seen. All of the people in liberal Missouri are buried in a circle, and their graves are all circular, pointing to a single grave in the middle. Well, it's supposed to be a single grave in the middle. You think that someone's going to be buried there, but when you go look in the middle, no one is buried there. You see, because George Walser said he wanted to be buried in the middle of his fellow infidels until he came in contact with the teachings of Jesus and started realizing that Jesus' teachings were correct, the New Testament was right, and he had been wrong all of these years. And so George Walser, believing in the teachings of Jesus, changed the way he lived, didn't want to be buried among the infidels and unbelievers, and his gravestone is in Lamar, Missouri now, about 45 miles away from liberal Missouri. Now, what does this show us? Well, here is what you don't get to see every day, because in everyday society, skepticism, infidelity, atheism, agnosticism, it's not the majority view. And so, it's not put into practice on a regular basis. So, you don't get to see the logical implications of what would happen there. But at liberal, you did. And you got to see that it was a society that none of us would want to be a part of. And so, we're going to ask the question, what happens when people behave like they don't believe in God? What are the fruits of atheism? But before we answer that, let's ask ourselves what the fruits of New Testament Christianity would be. What if people acted like Christians? Acted like what Jesus really said a Christian should do. Let's listen to... Now, I'll flip back. This is Bertrand Russell. Bertrand Russell once had an essay titled, Why I Am Not a Christian. He was no friend of Christianity. Don't misunderstand. He was a skeptic, he was an agnostic, and then an atheist, then back to an agnostic. He didn't appreciate what you're doing here this morning. But here's what he said. Christianity, as soon as it conquered the state, put an end to the gladiatorial shows, not because they were cruel, but because they were idolatrous. The result, however, was to diminish the widespread education in cruelty by which the populace of Roman towns were degraded. Christianity also did much to soften the lot of slaves. It established charity on a large scale. It inaugurated hospitals. And although the great majority of Christians failed lamentably in Christian charity, the ideal remained alive and in every age inspired some notable saints. In a new form, it passed over modern liberalism and remains the inspiration of much that is most hopeful in our somber world. What happens when people start acting like Christians? Oh, softened the lot of slaves, inaugurated hospitals and charity on a large scale, and remains the inspiration behind much that is most hopeful in our somber world. Do you want to live in a place where people act like Christians? Where they do to other people what they would want done to them? Where they are kind, tender-hearted, forgiving, loving as brothers? That's what the teachings of Jesus Christ aimed to get to happen in people's lives. In fact, there in Philippians chapter 2, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. What mind was that? Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each one of you look out not only for your own interest, but also for the interest of others. Is that the kind of society you want to live in? Where people are looking out not only for their own interest, but also for the interest of others? If you were to go to Ephesians chapter 4 and you start about verse 25, let him who stole steal no more, but rather let him labor with his hands that he might have something to give to him who has need. Would you like to live in a society where if someone else falls on hard times, maybe because of sickness or through nothing that they could control, and you have somebody beside them that could work hard and help them in their time of need, wouldn't that be the kind of society you want to be a part of? And then right after that, let him who stole steal no more. It says, do not lie to one another, but speak truth with your neighbor. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. Would that be a great place to live? Would you want to be in a congregation where everybody looked out not only for their own interest, but also for the interest of others, where people were kind, forgiving, tenderhearted, loved as brothers? Now, admittedly, we as Christians don't always put into practice what Jesus taught us, do we? And lots of times the skeptic will say, oh, okay, well, hold on just a second. But what about the Salem witch trials? What about the Crusades? What about lots of things that have been done negatively in the name of Christianity? Have there been people who have called themselves Christians and gone in and shot people and said they were doing that in the name of Christ? Have they done that? Yes. Now, here's the difference. The difference is that is a perversion of the teachings of Christ. And the skeptical community admits such. They have to admit that, okay, that's not what Jesus taught. That is someone saying they are a Christian and not acting like a Christian. Are there people every day that go to school or work and they claim to be a Christian and they use all kinds of bad language? Yes. What's going on there? Well, that's a person who says, I'm a Christian, but not putting Christianity into practice. Now, here's the difference. The difference that we're going to see in this discussion is atheism implies the type of behavior that was going on in liberal. It's not a perversion of the unbelief teaching. It's the natural outcome and implication of it. That's what you get when you don't believe that there's a God. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. In fact, I'm going to show that to you from the atheist statements themselves. The first problem with atheism is that you cannot have a standard foundational understanding of morals in any way if you do not believe in a God. Now, let me explain to you why. I think you get it. But if this material world is all that there is, and you are a product of blind, random chance processes over millions of years, when a dog steals a bone, you don't try that dog for theft. When a lion kills an antelope, you don't put that lion on the stand for murder. Now, if we were just somehow random chance accidental processes over millions of years, and we evolved from lower animals, at what point in the system do you step in and say, okay, a lion doesn't get tried for stealing, but a human does? A leopard doesn't get tried for murder, but a human does. You see, the problem is there's no standard for morality if there is no God. There again, you don't have to take my word for it. This was a Darwin Day address from a Cornell professor named William Provine. And in this Darwin Day, in every February, most colleges across the country celebrate Darwin Day. And it is basically atheistic, evolutionary celebration of unbelief is what you've really got going on. In fact, the debate that I had on the University of South Carolina's campus was a Darwin Day celebration debate. So he says, William Provine, he is an atheist, unbeliever, was. He died of brain cancer. He said, naturalistic evolution has clear consequences that Charles Darwin understood perfectly. He said, number one, no gods worth having exist. Number two, no life after death exists. And number three, no ultimate foundation for ethics exists. Number four, no meaning in life. And number five, human free will is non-existent. Now look at number three. No ultimate foundation for ethics exists. If you don't believe in God, how then do you say this is right and this is wrong? The fact of the matter is, Provine is saying you can't say that. You can say, I don't like it. You can say, I don't think it will be helpful to my society. You can say, I think I might be better if. But when you ask the question, is it wrong? Atheism just cannot say yes or no. There's no foundation upon which you can build an ethical, moral construct. You just can't make one. Now, listen to Charles Darwin. Remember, Provine said Darwin understood this perfectly. If a man has no assured and ever-present belief in the existence of a personal God, or future existence with retribution and reward. Now, this is Charles Darwin himself. He can have for his rule of life, as far as I can see, only to follow those impulses and instincts which are the strongest or which seem to him to be the best ones. He says, all right, look, if you don't believe in God and you're not doing something or not doing something because your Creator told you to do it or not do it, he said, all I can see that a person can do is just follow the impulses and instincts that seem best to them. Now, what happens when a person follows the instincts and impulses that seem best to them? There's a way that seems right to a man. You ever heard that statement? But the end is the way of... Well, let's see. You go into a restaurant, you order a 16-ounce T-bone steak. They bring you one, looks like about an 8-ounce. Your neighbor over here orders the same steak that you do. They bring him one, looks like a 24-ounce porterhouse. You look over, you're much bigger than he is. You've got to be much hungrier than he is because you're much bigger. You say, hey man, swap steaks with me. He says, I'm not swapping steaks with you. This is what they brought me. You say, this is it looks like an 8-ounce steak. I'm a lot bigger than you. I want that 24-ounce. He says, no, they brought this to me. I'm keeping it. Now, you're really, really hungry, and you look and you think you could beat this guy up pretty easily, and you want his steak pretty bad. And there's an instinct, an impulse that says, go punch him in the face and take it. What do you do? Well, if you don't believe that there's a God and there's no foundation for moral or ethical decisions, if you feel like you can get away with it and nobody's going to stop you from doing it, you punch him in the face, you take his steak, and dare him to do something. Do people do that on a fairly regular basis? Yes. Yes, they do. And we put them in jail for that. Because the idea that you can follow the instincts and impulses, suppose that you were to go before a court system and they say, hey, you came into a gas station, you pulled a pistol, you armed, robbed this particular gas station, and then you shot the clerk, and what is your defense? And the person says, I just felt like it. It was just the instinct and the impulse that was the strongest at the time. You see the problem with that. Atheism can't give you a better explanation as to why or why not something is wrong. Now they can say, well, if somebody did that, our society would be, or if we all engaged in that, we'd... No, the question is it right? And an atheist, if they're really sticking honestly with their atheism, has to say, I can't answer that question. Right, wrong, cannot be answered from an atheistic perspective. It just can't. Continue with me. Dan Barker made the statement. He said, there are no actions in and of themselves that are always absolutely right or wrong. It depends on the context. You cannot name an action that is always right or wrong. I can think of an exception in every case. Had a guy in Montgomery not long before I left. There was about 2 years ago now. This was put in the paper. There were two guys that wanted his truck. And his wife had called him, asked him to go pick up some bread and milk from the store. He went and picked up some bread and milk. He came out. There were two guys standing by his Ford F-150 truck. He came to it, was about to get in it, realized something was wrong. One of the guys pulled a pistol on him, shot him because he wanted his truck. Killed him dead to take his truck. Now, Dan Barker says, you can't name an action that is always right or wrong. I can think of an exception in every single case. You know why he can think of an exception in every single case? Because from an atheistic standpoint, you can't say something is right and something is wrong. You can say, oh, I don't like it. You can say, hey, I think it might be better for society if. You can say, I think we shouldn't do that because it will hurt more people. No, no, that's not the question. Is it right? And Barker says you can't answer that question. Not from an atheistic standpoint. So, let's look at how this would play out in real life. Because, believe me, it is playing out in real life. Abortion. The murder of innocent children. That we, in our culture, have basically just overlooked. I don't think we as New Testament Christians have. And we have tried to fight this practice at every level that we know how. But frustratingly, today, on average, in the United States of America, 2,500 babies will be killed. Tomorrow, 2,500 babies will be killed. The next day, 2,500 babies will be killed. For no reason other than we as a society have felt like these unborn children, we get to decide what happens to them. Now, when the Twin Towers fell and the terrorists flew those planes into the World Trade Center and our president came on international television and said, we are going to hunt out and hunt down the people who did this and any country that is harboring these types of terrorists, we're going to bring the terrorist and that country to justice. That day, we as the United States of America killed the same amount of babies as the terrorists killed in the Twin Towers attack. About 2,450 people died in that terrorist attack, and that day we killed 2,450 of our babies. The next day we killed 2,450 of our babies. The next day we did. Now, where was the speech that says we're going to hunt down the people who are killing our innocent children and we're going to bring them to justice? We are not going to put up with, we are going to demand that justice be served on people who kill innocent people. And in this country yesterday, people killed 2,500 innocent babies and we're going to bring them to justice. Did you hear that speech? No, you did not. Because as a society, we have just decided that unborn babies do not get the privilege of being called humans. Now, where could you get that idea? You can't get it from the Bible. In fact, from the Bible, every single time a person is discussed from conception, do you know what the Bible calls that person? A person. In fact, many times They are named months and months before they are born, and God considers them a person from the point of conception and uses the same words for children that are in utero, unborn children, as He does for children that have been born. There's no moral dividing line between birth and not birth. A child is a child 2 days before it's born, just like it's a child 2 days after it's born. A child is a child 2 months before it's born, just like it is 2 months after it's born. And the Bible consistently portrays that God hates the hands that shed innocent blood, and that innocent blood would certainly include unborn children. Now, where could you get the idea that it would be all right to kill innocent, unborn children? Barbara Bart, 1974, Infanticide, she says, among some animal species, infant killing appears to be a natural practice. Could it be natural for humans too, a trait inherited from our primate ancestors? Charles Darwin noted in The Descent of Man that infanticide has been probably the most important of all checks on population growth throughout most of human history. Now remember I said, if you believe we evolve from lower animals, at what point do you stick your finger in the system and say, no, here is where morality starts? Well, see, if you don't believe in God, you believe that every living organism evolved over multiplied millions of years, then if lower animals do it, well, what's the difference between them doing it and you doing it? You know, my parents bought a coon dog years ago. It's been about 15 years ago now. Oh, this dog had a pedigree a mile long. The puppies from this dog were going to be worth probably nigh unto $1,000. It's about a $10,000 dog, but they didn't understand why they got it so cheap. They got a great deal on it. Now, Queen was the dog's name. It would chase a coon. The problem with this dog was it was not a lazy man's coon dog. If she got on a coon, she would chase it for 3 miles until she got it. They had to hook up some GPS to it. But anyway, they thought, hey, when this coon dog has babies, we're going to be able to sell these for about $1,000 a piece. She had 8 the first time. She killed them all but one. Next litter, she had 12. Killed all of those but one. She thought that she could only take care of one puppy at a time. Now, Barbara Bark is saying, if you look at how a dog will have 12 puppies and kill all of them but one, they're just trying to control their population growth. And if dogs are animals and humans are animals, then is there really anything morally wrong with a human killing its unborn child to control population growth? And her answer to that is no. And her answer to that is no, because she is coming from an atheistic understanding that there's really no right or wrong. It's just how does it benefit society? Now, you and I both know that this country was founded on the Christian principle that humans are valuable. Don't take my word for it. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are, now listen to it close, created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among those are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now listen, if you're not created and endowed by your Creator with the right to life, where does that right come from? Oh, it doesn't. You see, atheism and unbelief strips humanity of its right to life, because the only place that a human can really get the value of the right to life is being endowed with that value by God. But if you weren't created by God and you're a blob of blind chance random processes, then really your life is only as valuable as its utility value. Only as valuable as how useful you are to your society. Now there again, don't take my word for it. Peter Singer, let me explain to you who Peter Singer is. Peter Singer is supposed to be the world's leading ethicist. An ethicist is a person who is supposed to be able to tell you how to make a decision about what's right and what's wrong. I watched him in a video with Richard Dawkins. Richard Dawkins is probably the world's leading atheist. He's a British biologist, and he has been in more debates and written more books on the non-existence of God than probably anybody. He's the most famous atheist. Now, in this video, Richard Dawkins says to this guy, I'm about to quote, Peter Singer, He says, you are the most moral man that I know. Okay? Now hold on to that thought. Peter Singer is an atheist ethicist who Richard Dawkins says is the most moral man that he knows. Now, if we compare a severely defective human infant with a non-human animal, a dog or pig, for example, we will often find the non-human to have superior capacities. Only the fact that the defective human is a member of the species Homo sapiens, only the fact that the person is a human, leads it to be treated differently from the dog or pig. Species membership alone, however, is not morally relevant. You follow the thought? You got a dog or a pig, you got a human over here. Historically, he says, we've kept the human alive. Why? He said, well, the only reason, not because it's going to be more helpful to society, not because we've kept the human alive because it was a human. That's it. But he said, species membership, the fact that this is a human and this is a dog or a pig, that's not morally relevant. That's not what you should make your decision based on. Really? Why are you valuable? Because you can run faster than the person sitting next to you? Because you're smarter than the person sitting next to you? If you're sitting next to your wife, that's probably not true. Because why? You are valuable for a single reason. Because you are created in the image and likeness of God. That's what makes you different than a mosquito or a dog or a pig. And that's why you can eat cows, but you keep people alive. You can eat chickens, but you keep people alive. Why? Because a chicken is a chicken. And a person, a human, is created in the image of God. And it doesn't matter how smart that person is. Doesn't matter how fast they're going to be able to run. Doesn't matter how beneficial to society they're going to be. People are people because they're created in God's image. What if you throw God's image out? And you say, well, you're not created in God's image. You're just an animal like every other animal. So then how do you start making the decision? If you don't believe there's a God, and there's no spiritual entity, no higher value to an organism than the material it's made out of, how do you make a decision about which ones to keep, which ones to get rid of? Well, Peter's going to tell you. He says, if we can put aside the obsolete and erroneous notion of the sanctity of all human life, we might start to look at human life as it really is. He says, look, if we can just quit thinking about humans as humans, and just start thinking about the animals, we might really make some moral progress here. Well, what does he mean by moral progress? Now notice this. In his writings on an ethical life, that a fetus is known to be disabled is widely accepted as ground for abortion. Now stop right there. In what circles? In secular, non-Christian circles, here's what he's saying. Most all of his readers, if you were to say to his readers, hey, if you find out that this unborn baby has some mental or physical disabilities, they would all say, okay, yes, you could abort that child. Now, notice what he's saying, though. We would not agree with that at all. But now this next statement we would agree wholeheartedly with. He says, yet in discussing abortion, we say that birth does not mark a morally significant dividing line. Now, that's what we've always said as Christians, isn't it? We've said, okay, guys, hold on just a second. How much sense does it make for you to say a baby can be aborted one day before it's born, but the day after it's born, it's a human? Does that make any sense? No, none whatsoever. Now, he's finally saying what we've been saying for years. Okay, birth does not change what this organism is. It's a person before birth. It's a person after it's born. It's a person 3 months before. It's a person after. Now, finally, someone is saying the same thing that we are saying. Yes, birth does not mark a morally dividing line. Okay, so if that's true, you're hoping he's going to go the next step and say, we've said you could abort the baby before it's born, but if birth doesn't mark a morally dividing line, then no, you can't kill the child before it's born. That's one way you could go if you were thinking about this from the Christian standpoint, that all humans are created and endowed by God with the right to life. But if you're not, which way are you going to go? Oh, birth doesn't mark a morally dividing line. And if you can kill it a day before or a month before or 2 months before, then what? Well, let's let him say, because he does. If disabled newborn infants were not regarded as having a right to life until, say, a week or a month after birth, it would allow parents, in consultation with their doctors, to choose on the basis of far greater knowledge of the infant's condition than is possible before birth. He said, we got this all wrong. Birth doesn't change the status of the baby. So if you could kill it a month before, then what's he saying? You could kill it a month after. Now, look, listen to me, and listen to me close. This is not Kyle Butt standing up here telling you what atheism implies and where it goes. This is the leading atheistic ethicist in the world telling you himself that you could kill babies a month after they're born and that would be an ethical decision. And the leading atheist in the whole world, Richard Dawkins, saying to this man, you're the most moral individual that I know. Now here's why this is so important to you and me. Right now atheism is in the minority at the present. But it is growing by leaps and bounds. In fact, the statistics show us that it is the number one religious growing group in the country. Literally. Now, when this godlessness starts taking over to such a degree that it has a big impact on policy and other things in our country, where do you think this is going? Atheism is not a harmful, inane, hey, you don't believe it, but you don't believe there's a God. I do believe there's a God. Shake hands. Okay, fine. No, this is a sinister, demonic belief system that will cause the depletion of any moral standards and values. Now, a person who doesn't will say, well, hold on just a second. Wait just a second. I'm an atheist and I don't do that kind of stuff. And I don't believe that. Okay. Do we know a lot of Christians who call themselves Christians and don't behave like Christians? Yeah. Just because a person is an unbeliever and doesn't practice this stuff does not mean that unbelief doesn't imply these things. You can say, well, I don't do that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, your belief system allows for those things to happen. And so, that's why this is so very important. It's pretty heady stuff for a Sunday morning Bible class, isn't it? Kind of makes you a little uncomfortable. Kind of gets you thinking, I wish we'd have maybe just stuck with the book of James this morning. But there's a reason you need to know this. Because we are literally in a fight for the moral foundation of our country, our communities, our societies. And you need to know where this stuff leads and not just think, well, hey, I mean, if they believe that and I believe something else, it's just a difference of belief. No, in practice, it is very, very serious. Continue with me. James Rachels was a professor at the University of Alabama, if I understand it correctly. He wrote a book titled Created from Animals, The Moral Implications of Darwinism. Now notice this. Hold on just a second. Let's look at an implication. An implication is something that is the natural outcome, even though it hasn't been stated yet. There's a statement in the book of Revelation. It says, the gates of the city are not closed by day, and there is no night there. Now, what's the implication of those two statements? The gates are not closed by day and there's no night. That means the gates are never closed. Now, it doesn't say the gates are never closed. It says the gates aren't closed by day and there's no night. And the implied truth is that means they're never closed. An implication is a truth that is implied and it's just as valid and just as important and just as true as what is stated. It's just implied. Now, notice the implication, according to James Rachels, of atheism. An infant with severe brain damage, even if it survives for many years, it may never learn to speak. Its abilities may never rise above a primitive level. Okay, so what are we to do with this? I mean, in that case, the moral individualism that we're talking about says, don't prefer the baby's life over a monkey's. Okay, well, hold on. Let's see where that's going then. Some unfortunate humans, perhaps because they have suffered brain damage, are not rational agents. What are we to say about them? The natural conclusion, according to the doctrine we're considering, their status is that of mere animals. Okay, that's what they've been saying. Now take it the step further that this unbelief implies. And perhaps we should go on to conclude that they may be used as non-human animals are used. Perhaps as laboratory experiments or food. When you get rid of the idea that there is a God who created humans in His own image, and you substitute it with the idea that humans are the product of blind random chance processes over multiplied millions of years, you erode every single foundation for a moral value. And so notice how these guys are making decisions. Well, if it's best for society if we keep these, and best for society if we don't keep these, then that's how we're going to make our decisions. Hold on, that's not what we ask. What we ask is it right? And atheism just says, well, I can't answer that question. But you know, the fact of the matter is, as God so many times said in the Bible, there is a God in heaven. And if there is a God in heaven, then every single one of us have value, not because of how fast we run, not because of how smart we are, not because of what we add to society. You've got value because you were created in the image and the likeness of God. And there's nothing that has the prerogative to do away with that value because you were endowed with that value by your Creator. Let's make sure we behave like Christians, so that when people come to us and they say, yeah, well, Christianity, we say, yes, we understand. We're not perfect, but we are trying to live out Christianity. And I hope that you'll see what we do as Christians, just like what Bertrand Russell saw, inaugurated charity on a large scale, built hospitals, and Christianity remains the inspiration behind much that is most hopeful in our somber world. That's still the case today. And let's make sure we as Christians are living that out so they can see what Christianity really is and what it's all about. Appreciate your kind time and attention.